You are listening to This Week in Palestine, Truth and Justice Radio, WZBC, Boston College. Before we begin, a quick reminder for our listeners. The perspectives shared in this hour belong to our hosts and guests alone. They do not necessarily reflect the views of WZBC, Boston College, or its Board of Trustees. You're listening to This Week in Palestine, a space where we refuse to whisper the truth, a space where we speak plainly, urgently, and without apology. Wherever you are, driving through the night, preparing breakfast at dawn, or listening quietly in the stillness of your home, thank you for choosing to spend this time with us. I'm your host and narrator, Abby Masri, and today is Sunday, April 12, 2026. On this program, we do not sand down the sharp edges of reality. We do not rewrite the story to soothe the powerful. This is a place for truth in its raw form, a place where resistance is lived, not imagined, where solidarity is not a slogan, but a legacy carried forward through generations. From the heart of occupation, voices rise, not in isolation, not as fate echoes swallowed by empire, but together, steady, unbroken, standing alongside movements across the world that demand dignity, justice, and liberation for all people. This hour is more than a broadcast. It is a lifeline, a thread stretching from Palestine to every corner of the globe, binding shattered homes to unshaken hope, binding devastation to determination, binding grief to a future still worth fighting for. Even in the deepest darkness, the ember of defiance refuses to fade. Each week, we bring you reporting that cuts through distortion, analysis that refuses disguise, and reflections that center Palestinian life in all its depth, struggle, beauty, and humanity. We do not soften. We do not dilute. We speak with intention because the stakes are far too high for anything less. This Week in Palestine is not a refuge for polite avoidance. It is testimony. It is urgency. It is solidarity without hesitation, because the struggle for liberation does not belong to one land, one people, or one moment in time. It is shared. It is global. And it is sacred. Today, I want to start with the question almost no one in power wants to answer honestly. Why did the war on Iran even begin? Why were we told it was necessary? Why were we told it was urgent? Why were we told it was unavoidable? We heard one explanation after another, shifting, contradicting, reshaping itself every time a microphone appeared. One day it was about opening the Strait of Hormuz, even though the strait was never closed. Another day it was about protecting global energy routes. Another day it was about deterring threats. And then suddenly it was about ballistic missiles supposedly capable of reaching the United States, a claim many analysts around the world dismissed as exaggerated or politically motivated. So what was the real reason? What was the spark? What was the calculation? Some people argue that Iran's political stance, especially its vocal support for Palestinians, made it a target. Others point to long-standing regional tensions. Others believe the conflict was shaped by alliances, pressure, and geopolitical agendas that had little to do with American safety and everything to do with strategic influence. But here's the part that matters most. Whatever the reason was, the American people were never given a clear, consistent, honest explanation. And now we are living with the consequences. Because every war has a winner and a loser, except this one. This is the rare conflict where both sides lose, and the fallout spreads far beyond the battlefield. Let's talk about what this war has already cost us, not in abstract numbers, not in distant policy language, but in real terms that every American can understand. The estimated cost has climbed past $46 billion, and it's still rising. $46 billion, a number so large it barely feels real. So let's make it real. $46 billion could fund 621,000 years of teacher salaries. It could pay for 372,000 full four-year college degrees. It could cover 4.9 million annual health insurance premiums. It could provide housing for 3.6 million homeless people for an entire year. And after all of that, after lifting millions of Americans out of crisis, we would still have money left over. Money that could have gone to infrastructure, healthcare, education, renewable energy, small businesses, veterans services, or simply lowering the cost of living for families who are barely hanging on. Instead, that money was poured into a war that many people believe was unnecessary, avoidable, and strategically disastrous. Because look at what has happened. First, the conflict accelerated the rise of new global powers. Analysts around the world now argue that the balance of influence is shifting eastward, toward China, toward Russia, nations that have watched this war unfold with strategic patience, calculating every misstep, every escalation, every consequence. Second, the war exposed vulnerabilities in American military strategy. Decades of investment in massive aircraft carriers, symbols of U.S. dominance, were suddenly questioned as new technologies and new tactics challenged their effectiveness. Third, American bases across the region, built over more than half a century, were damaged, evacuated, or rendered inoperable. Infrastructure that took generations to establish was compromised in a matter of weeks. Fourth, the economic impact is not just measured in billions spent abroad. It's measured in rising gas prices, rising inflation, rising national debt, and rising anxiety among ordinary Americans who feel the squeeze every time they buy groceries, pay rent, or fill their tank. And for what? For a war we believe had no clear objective, no clear strategy, and no clear benefit to the American people. This is the part that hurts the most. We paid for this war. Not the wealthy, not the corporations, not the political class. Us. Ordinary Americans, workers, families, people who already struggle to make ends meet. And while we were paying the price, the national conversation shifted away from Palestine, away from a humanitarian catastrophe, away from a crisis that should never have left the world's conscience. The suffering continued, but the spotlight moved. The headlines changed. The narrative was redirected. And that, too, is part of the cost. So here we are, standing in the aftermath of decisions we did not make, paying for consequences we did not choose, watching global power shift in ways that will shape the next generation. And we are left with questions. Questions that demand answers, questions that deserve honesty, questions that cannot be buried under political theater. Why did this war start? Who truly benefited? Who paid the price? And what happens next? Because if we don't ask these questions loudly, clearly, relentlessly, then the same mistakes will be made again. And the cost next time may be even higher. The video titled Iran cuts Israel's GPS signal by Colonel Douglas McGregor presents a sweeping analysis of how modern warfare is shifting in ways that many people never imagined, focusing on claims that Iran has dramatically escalated its electronic warfare capabilities by disrupting or cutting GPS signals used by Israeli aircraft, including the Advance F-35, leaving them effectively flying blind and unable to rely on the satellite-based systems that normally give them a decisive technological advantage. The commentary explains that today's air forces depend heavily on GPS for navigation, targeting, and weapons guidance, and when those signals are jammed or spoofed, even the most sophisticated jets can lose situational awareness, forcing pilots to rely on backup systems that are far less precise. According to the analysis, Iran targeted these vulnerabilities deliberately, using electronic warfare to neutralize Israel's air superiority without engaging in direct combat, and Douglas McGregor, a retired U.S. Army colonel known for his blunt assessments, argues that this interference may have disrupted not only Israeli aircraft, but also U.S. systems operating in the region. The video describes how GPS jamming blocks signals entirely, while spoofing feeds false coordinates to aircraft, and suggests Iran may have used both techniques simultaneously, creating confusion in the air and undermining the effectiveness of GPS-guided munitions that depend on accurate satellite data. The discussion expands to note that Russia and China possess similar electronic warfare capabilities and that Iran has likely benefited from their technology and expertise, raising concerns about a broader global shift in military power where control of the electromagnetic spectrum becomes more decisive than traditional firepower. The analysis claims that the United States was caught off guard by the scale and sophistication of Iran's electronic warfare, with officials reportedly alarmed by how quickly advanced aircraft became vulnerable once GPS signals were compromised. And it argues that this incident exposes a critical weakness in Western military planning, an over-reliance on digital systems that can be disrupted by nations with strong electronic warfare programs. The implications, according to the video, extend far beyond the Middle East, because if aircraft like the F-35 can be blinded by electronic interference, then any nation relying heavily on satellite navigation may need to rethink its strategy, as future wars may be shaped less by missiles and jets and more by whoever controls the electromagnetic spectrum. The commentary frames this as a potential turning point in modern warfare, suggesting that Iran's actions demonstrate how smaller nations can challenge technologically superior militaries by targeting their digital infrastructure rather than engaging in direct confrontation, and that this shift could redefine global power dynamics in the years ahead. The video concludes with a warning that militaries around the world must adapt quickly because as electronic warfare becomes more advanced, traditional assumptions about air dominance may no longer hold, and nations that fail to evolve risk losing their strategic advantage in conflicts where digital disruption can be as powerful as physical destruction. In essence, the message is that the battlefield is changing, the rules are changing, and the balance of power may be changing with it, and anyone who ignores these developments does so at their own peril. Let's together listen to Colonel Douglas McGregor's analysis.
What you are about to hear is not a hypothetical war game exercise conducted in some Pentagon basement. What happened in the skies above the Middle East in the past 72 hours represents a rupture in the foundational assumptions of modern aerial warfare, a rupture so complete, so humiliating, and so strategically consequential that the governments in Tel Aviv and Washington are currently doing everything in their power to suppress its full implications from reaching the public. Israel's F-35 Iadir, the most expensive, most technologically sophisticated combat aircraft ever mass-produced, the jewel of the IDF's air dominance doctrine, the platform that American defense contractors spent decades and hundreds of billions of dollars perfecting, went blind. Not metaphorically blind, operationally, navigationally, lethally blind. Iran's electronic warfare architecture, refined across years of sanctioned isolation and strategic patience, reached out across hundreds of kilometers of contested airspace and severed the GPS lifeline that Israel's entire aerial combat doctrine depends upon. And when those F-35s lost their positioning certainty, they lost everything. Missions were aborted. Strike packages dissolved mid-flight. Pilots operating the most advanced avionics suite in the world suddenly found themselves flying expensive aluminum into an electromagnetic void where coordinates shifted, targeting solutions evaporated, and the safe return corridor became a question mark rather than a certainty. The IDF's air superiority, the strategic cornerstone that has underpinned Israeli military dominance across seven decades, did not collapse under enemy fire. It collapsed under enemy electrons. Tonight, we are going to tear apart exactly how Iran executed this operation, what it means for the future of aerial warfare, why the F-35 program's most dangerous vulnerability was hiding in plain sight for years, and what the loss of air superiority means for Israel's ability to sustain this conflict at all. We will trace the full chain from Iran's indigenously developed electronic warfare systems to the geopolitical implications of a world where a sanctioned nation just demonstrated it can blind the most advanced air force on Earth without firing a single missile. The truth being suppressed in the briefing rooms of Tel Aviv and Washington tonight is this: the age of GPS-dependent aerial supremacy just ended, and Iran ended it. Before we go further, if this analysis is reaching the depth and honesty that mainstream coverage refuses to provide, hit like, subscribe, and leave your perspective in the comments below. Your support keeps this channel operating at full independence. To understand the magnitude of what Iran accomplished, you first need to understand what the F-35 actually is and what it actually depends on. Western defense marketing has spent 20 years building a mythology around this aircraft stealth, sensor fusion, networked warfare, fifth generation dominance. And in many respects, those capabilities are genuine. The F-35 represents the pinnacle of integrated avionics engineering. Its ability to synthesize radar data, infrared signatures, electronic emissions, and communications intercepts into a single, coherent tactical picture for the pilot is genuinely revolutionary. But beneath all of that technological sophistication lies a dependency so fundamental, so deeply embedded in every system aboard the aircraft, that when it is compromised, the entire edifice of F-35 capability begins to crumble. That dependency is GPS. The global positioning system underpins the F-35's navigation architecture, its weapons guidance calculations, its formation coordination protocols, its target handoff procedures between networked aircraft, and critically, its ability to safely execute the low altitude, high speed terrain following flight profiles that constitute its primary strike delivery method. Remove GPS with sufficient precision and persistence, and the F-35 is no longer a fifth-generation strike platform. It becomes an extraordinarily expensive aircraft that its pilot cannot fully trust to be where its instruments say it is. Iran spent years preparing exactly this capability, the electronic warfare architecture that Tehran activated in the hours before dawn was not improvised. It was the product of a long-term developmental program that combined Russian technical knowledge of GPS signal structure, Chinese expertise in signal processing and jamming waveform design, and Iran's own IRGC, Electronic Warfare Command's operational experience, accumulated across years of testing against American systems in the Gulf region. The operation began not with jamming, but with something more sophisticated, GPS spoofing at scale. Spoofing is categorically more dangerous than jamming because it is invisible to the target. When a GPS receiver is jammed, the aircraft systems recognize the signal loss and alert the pilot. Emergency navigation protocols activate, the mission profile changes. But when GPS signals are spoofed, when counterfeit positioning data is injected into the receiver with sufficient fidelity, the aircraft systems register nothing abnormal. The navigation suite continues operating. The weapon systems continue calculating. The pilot has no indication that every coordinate his aircraft is processing is a carefully constructed lie. Iranian electronic warfare teams deployed spoofing transmitters across a distributed network of mobile platforms positioned throughout western Iran, eastern Syria, and the Bekaa Valley in Lebanon. The network was designed to create an overlapping zone of corrupted GPS signal coverage extending deep into Israeli airspace, a region where F-35 pilots conducting strike missions would fly through a bubble of false coordinates without any system-level warning that their navigation data had been compromised. The first indication that something was catastrophically wrong came from Israeli mission planning centers rather than from aircraft. As the initial wave of F-35s prosecuted their assigned strike corridors, weapons release solutions were generating anomalous results. Precision-guided munitions that should have been tracking cleanly toward pre-designated coordinates were deviating from expected impact points. The sophisticated joint direct attack munitions and small diameter bombs carried by these aircraft used GPS as their primary guidance input during the terminal phase of flight. When that GPS data is falsified, the weapon follows the false coordinates with perfect fidelity, striking precisely where it was told to go, which is precisely nowhere near the intended target. Mission commanders watching the debrief data understood within minutes that they were dealing with a GPS compromise of unprecedented scale and sophistication. But by the time that recognition propagated through the command chain and abort orders were transmitted, multiple strike packages had already released ordnance. Some weapons impacted open terrain. Others impacted locations that created serious secondary complications for Israeli operational planning. The strike missions of that night did not destroy Hezbollah infrastructure. They generated confusion, wasted munitions, and exposed the most sensitive vulnerability in Israel's air warfare architecture. Then the jamming began. Once Iran's electronic warfare command assessed that the spoofing phase had achieved maximum confusion within Israeli mission planning, the network shifted modes. Broadband GPS jamming was activated across the same geographic footprint, now deliberately alerting Israeli systems to the signal denial environment. This phase was psychological as much as technical. It forced Israeli air commanders to make an immediate choice: continue operations using degraded inertial navigation systems with sharply reduced accuracy, or stand down and absorb the strategic cost of losing offensive air capacity during a critical operational window. The answer that came back from Israeli command that night was the one that no Western defense planner had publicly admitted was possible. The answer was stand down. F-35 sorties were curtailed, strike missions were postponed. The aircraft that the Israeli Air Force has treated as the unchallengeable guarantor of its regional dominance were pulled back from the operational envelope where their GPS dependency made them tactically unreliable. For the first time in the modern era, Israel's Air Force lost its ability to project offensive power on its own timeline, not because enemy fighters intercepted its aircraft, not because surface-to-air missiles denied its airspace, but because an adversary reached into its navigation architecture and made its most advanced weapons untrustworthy. The IDF had lost the air war without a single dogfight. Understanding how Iran built this capability requires confronting a deliberate and sustained Western intelligence failure that spans more than a decade. American, Israeli, and European defense analysts consistently underestimated and in many documented cases actively chose to dismiss the depth and sophistication of Iran's electronic warfare development program. The assumption embedded in Western threat assessments was grounded in a form of technological arrogance. a nation under comprehensive economic sanctions, denied access to Western microelectronics, cut off from international defense procurement channels, simply could not develop electronic warfare systems capable of threatening fifth-generation aircraft. That assumption just died in the skies above the Middle East. Iran's electronic warfare capability did not emerge overnight. Its roots trace back to 2011, when Iranian forces captured an American RQ-170 Sentinel reconnaissance drone almost entirely intact. The United States government initially attempted to claim the drone had malfunctioned and crashed. Within weeks, it became apparent that Iranian engineers had executed a GPS spoofing attack that caused the drone's navigation system to believe it was approaching its home base in Afghanistan while it was actually being guided to a soft landing inside Iranian territory. That single captured platform gave Iranian engineers direct access to American GPS receiver architecture, the signal processing logic that governs navigation systems in American military platforms, and critically, the exact fidelity thresholds that GPS receivers use to authenticate incoming positioning signals. Iranian reverse engineering teams worked on the RQ-170's systems for years, extracting every technical insight available. What they learned about American GPS dependency informed an entire generation of electronic warfare system development within the IRGC. Over the following decade, Iran developed what military analysts who have subsequently reviewed the evidence are calling a layered GPS denial architecture, a system that operates across multiple modes simultaneously, can be deployed from mobile platforms that are difficult to target and destroy, and is specifically engineered against the GPS signal authentication protocols used in American and Israeli military systems. The core of the system is a high-power spoofing transmitter network operating in the L1 and L2 GPS frequency bands. The specific frequencies used by military-grade GPS receivers in aircraft like the F-35. Iranian engineers developed what appears to be a signal generation capability that can produce spoofed GPS transmissions with sufficient timing accuracy and signal structure fidelity to defeat the authentication checking built into military GPS receivers. This is not simple jamming. This requires precise knowledge of GPS signal architecture and sophisticated real-time signal generation capability that Western analysts assumed was beyond Iran's technical reach. They were wrong. The navigation denial system is complemented by a broader electronic warfare suite that Iran has deployed across its regional network. The Mersad and Kashef radar systems, developed indigenously over the past decade, provide Iran with detection and tracking capability against low observable targets, including aircraft with reduced radar cross-sections like the F-35. These systems operate on frequencies and waveform designs that are specifically chosen to exploit the gaps in the F-35's radar warning receiver coverage. When Israeli F-35S entered Iranian electronic warfare coverage zones last night, they were not invisible. They were being tracked by systems specifically engineered to see them, while simultaneously being fed false GPS data that degraded their ability to respond effectively. The satellite dimension is equally critical. Iran's navigation independence from American GPS was sealed through its partnership with Russia's GLONASS satellite navigation system and China's Beidou constellation. Iranian military platforms, including the electronic warfare transmitters deployed last night, use navigation derived from GLONASS and Beidou positioning rather than GPS. This means that while Iranian systems were systematically corrupting Israeli GPS data, their own targeting and positioning systems remained fully operational and fully accurate. Iran was navigating with precision while Israel was flying blind. The asymmetry of that situation on an active battlefield is almost impossible to overstate. The mobile deployment architecture of Iran's electronic warfare network deserves specific attention because it represents the primary reason why Israel has not been able to simply destroy the capability with airstrikes. The transmitter platforms are mounted on heavy military trucks, constantly repositioned, operating on pre-planned emission schedules that limit their detectable signature windows to minutes at a time. When Israeli signals intelligence attempts to geolocate an active spoofing transmitter, the platform has typically relocated before a strike mission can be planned and executed. This cat-and-mouse dynamic has been playing out for months, and Iran has been winning it. What makes the capability even more dangerous is its scalability. The GPS denial architecture that Iran deployed last night against Israeli F-35 operations is not a fixed installation that can be destroyed in a single strike. It is a distributed, mobile, redundant network that can be degraded but not eliminated through conventional air attack. Destroying one node simply shifts the coverage map slightly. The operational effect, the corrupted GPS environment over Israeli airspace persists. The implications of what Iran demonstrated last night extend far beyond the immediate tactical situation over Israeli airspace. What Tehran has proven in live operational conditions against actual F-35 combat missions is that GPS-dependent aerial warfare, the foundational model upon which the entire American military power projection architecture has been built for 30 years, carries a systemic vulnerability that can be exploited by a determined adversary with the right technological investments. This is Washington's nightmare scenario, and it has just become operational reality. The American way of war since the Gulf War of 1991 has been built on a simple foundational concept, precision. GPS-guided munitions replaced the carpet bombing doctrine of previous eras, enabling small numbers of aircraft to achieve targeting effects that previously required hundreds of sorties. The F-35, the B-2, the F-22, and the entire family of precision-guided munitions in the American arsenal assume GPS availability as a baseline operational condition. Mission planning software assumes GPS, logistics coordination assumes GPS, joint terminal attack controller communications assume GPS. The entire integrated joint warfare architecture that makes American military power so lethal assumes that the positioning data flowing through every system is trustworthy. Iran just demonstrated that this assumption can be defeated, not theoretically defeated, operationally defeated against the most advanced aircraft the United States has ever exported to an ally in an active combat environment, with results that forced a mission stand down. The Pentagon's response to this demonstration has been characteristically institutional acknowledgement of the challenging electronic warfare environment in classified briefings, followed by silence in public communications. The reasons for this silence are understandable. Publicly acknowledging that Iran has developed GPS denial capability sufficient to neutralize F-35 strike operations would trigger a cascade of strategic consequences that Washington is not prepared to manage. Allied nations across Asia and Europe that have purchased or are purchasing F-35 aircraft would immediately begin reassessing the capability guarantees they received during the procurement process. Taiwan, Japan, South Korea, Poland, and a dozen other nations whose defense planning depends on F-35 performance in a GPS-contested environment would be forced to ask uncomfortable questions about what exactly they paid for. The international defense procurement market for American fifth-generation aircraft would face serious turbulence. More immediately, the deterrence calculus in every active theater where American power projection depends on GPS-guided precision strike would need to be recalculated. If Iran can do this, the analytical question that every serious defense ministry on Earth is now asking is who else can? Russia has been developing GPS denial and spoofing capability for years. The evidence from Ukraine demonstrates Russian electronic warfare teams routinely degrading GPS accuracy for Ukrainian forces. China's electronic warfare investment program is arguably even more sophisticated than Iran's. North Korea has demonstrated GPS jamming capability that has affected civilian aviation in South Korea repeatedly. The answer to the question of who else can execute GPS denial operations against American forces is multiple adversaries in multiple theaters with varying but growing levels of capability. What Iran did last night is not a unique Iranian achievement. It is the most publicly visible demonstration of a vulnerability that American military planners have been quietly acknowledging in classified assessments for years. The American defense establishment's response to this vulnerability has been the development of alternative navigation technologies, inertial navigation system improvements, terrain referenced navigation, anti-jam GPS receivers with more sophisticated authentication protocols. Some of these technologies are already being retrofitted into existing platforms. But the timeline for full fleet integration across the F-35 program runs to years, not months. The vulnerability that Iran exploited last night will persist in operational Israeli and American F-35 fleets for a significant period, regardless of whatever emergency technical measures are now being accelerated. In the immediate operational context, Washington is providing Israel with emergency technical guidance on alternative navigation protocols and GPS anti-jam equipment. But the fundamental problem cannot be solved with a firmware update and an emergency equipment delivery. It requires a comprehensive rethinking of how precision aerial warfare is conducted in a GPS-contested environment, and that rethinking will take years to translate into operational doctrine and equipment. Iran took that time away from the equation last night, and Washington is still processing exactly what that means. Israel's military doctrine is built on a specific and carefully calibrated logic. Given the Jewish state's geographic reality, a small nation surrounded by adversaries, lacking strategic depth, with a civilian population concentrated in a narrow coastal corridor, the IDF has always understood that it cannot afford to fight long wars of attrition. Every conflict must be ended quickly, decisively, and on terms that restore deterrence for the next confrontation. The instrument that makes this rapid, decisive warfare doctrine possible is air power. Israel's air force has historically served as the great equalizer, the capability that allows a small nation to project force far beyond its borders, strike targets deep inside adversary territory, and create the conditions for rapid ground operations by eliminating enemy air defense, logistics, and command infrastructure before infantry and armor ever cross a line of departure. For this doctrine to work, Israel's air force must be able to operate freely. It must be able to plan strikes with confidence, execute them with precision, and achieve the effects that justify the enormous investment in fifth-generation aircraft and precision munitions. Lose that freedom of operation, lose the ability to strike with confidence, and the entire rapid, decisive warfare architecture collapses. Iran just collapsed it. When Israeli F-35s cannot be trusted to navigate accurately, cannot release weapons with confidence that they will strike intended targets, and must be pulled back from operational strike envelopes to protect them from mission failure and potential loss, Israel's military doctrine enters a state of paralysis that its adversaries have been working toward for years. Hezbollah can continue launching rockets from Lebanon without fear of the precise, sustained Israeli air interdiction campaign that would normally suppress the threat within days. Iranian-linked forces in Syria can continue operating logistics routes that would normally be targeted by Israeli air power operating under full GPS reliability. The entire architecture of Israeli forward deterrence, the ability to reach out and strike any target anywhere in the region with confidence and precision, is currently degraded. The psychological dimension of this paralysis compounds the tactical one. Israeli society and the Israeli political establishment have been conditioned by decades of IDF performance to expect rapid, decisive military results. When the Air Force cannot deliver those results, when missions are aborted, when strike packages are pulled back, when the morning news cannot report successful strikes against enemy infrastructure, the political pressure on the War Cabinet intensifies rapidly. Prime Minister Netanyahu and the Security Cabinet are now facing a situation where the military instrument they have relied upon most heavily is operating at reduced effectiveness against an adversary that is not reducing its own offensive. Pressure. Hezbollah's rocket campaigns continue. Iranian-supplied precision missiles continue reaching Israeli territory. The GPS degradation that is limiting F-35 effectiveness is not affecting Hezbollah's launch operations, their weapons use, inertial guidance, and terrain matching rather than GPS, specifically because Iranian weapons designers anticipated exactly this kind of navigation warfare environment and designed their export weapons accordingly. Israel is absorbing incoming fire while its primary counter-battery instrument is grounded or operating at significantly reduced effectiveness. This is not a situation that the Israeli war cabinet can sustain politically or militarily for an extended period. The options being discussed in Tel Aviv's emergency sessions are all painful. Continuing to fly F-35 missions with degraded navigation means accepting reduced strike accuracy and the risk of high-profile mission failures that would further damage deterrence credibility. Shifting to older F-15 and F-16 aircraft that use different navigation systems and are less GPS-dependent provides partial relief, but sacrifices the stealth and sensor fusion capabilities that the F-35 brings. Requesting emergency American intervention to suppress Iranian electronic warfare transmitters requires committing American forces more deeply than Washington's current risk calculus appears to support. None of these options restore the strategic situation to the baseline that existed before Iran activated its GPS denial network. The damage to Israeli air power doctrine is not a problem that can be solved this week. It is a structural recalibration of what Israeli air power can and cannot do in a conflict against an adversary with sophisticated electronic warfare capability. And that recalibration has implications that extend far beyond the current fight. What Iran demonstrated in the skies above the Middle East last night is being analyzed not only in Tel Aviv and Washington, but in every serious defense ministry on earth. The strategic significance of this demonstration cannot be reduced to its immediate tactical outcomes. What Tehran has shown is that the technological monopoly on advanced warfare capability that the United States and its allies have held since the end of the Cold War is no longer absolute, and that the pathway to challenging that monopoly runs not through expensive aircraft carriers and ballistic missile programs, but through precisely targeted investments in the electromagnetic spectrum. Electronic warfare is the great equalizer of 21st century military competition. It does not require massive industrial capacity. It does not require the kind of advanced manufacturing base that produces fifth generation aircraft. It requires deep technical knowledge of adversary systems, sophisticated software engineering capability, and the strategic patience to develop and refine capabilities across years of iterative testing. All of these are things that a sanctioned nation with a strong engineering culture and a clear strategic objective can develop, and Iran has now proven that definitively. The implications for global power competition are profound. Russia has been watching the Iranian demonstration with close professional attention. Moscow's own electronic warfare programs are more advanced than Tehran's. And the operational lessons from Iranian GPS denial operations against F-35S will be incorporated into Russian doctrine for potential conflict in European theaters. Chinese defense analysts are equally attentive. Beijing's investment in electronic warfare and space-based navigation denial capability has been substantial and sustained, and the Iranian proof of concept against American GPS-dependent systems validates the strategic logic of that investment. The United States is now confronting a world in which its military power projection model, built on the assumption of GPS availability across every theater, faces credible denial threats from multiple adversaries simultaneously. This is not a problem that can be solved by building more F-35S. It requires a fundamental architectural rethinking of how American and allied military power is structured, equipped, and operated. For smaller nations in the developing world that have been watching this conflict, the Iranian demonstration carries a different but equally significant message. The path to credible self-defense against technologically superior adversaries does not require matching them platform for platform. It requires identifying the dependencies that make advanced platforms vulnerable and investing in the capability to exploit those dependencies. GPS denial, cyber operations, anti-satellite weapons, and electromagnetic spectrum control are all instruments that a determined nation can develop at a fraction of the cost of the platforms they can neutralize. Iran has written a strategic manual last night, and it will be read carefully in Pyongyang, in Caracas, in Harare, in every capital where a government is trying to figure out how to defend its sovereignty against potential American military pressure. The lesson is stark and clear. Find the dependency, attack the dependency, and the most expensive military machine in history can be made to malfunction. The Gulf Cooperation Council states are watching these developments with profound anxiety. Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and Qatar have all made enormous investments in American military equipment, F-35S, Patriot batteries, THAAD systems predicated on the assumption that American technological superiority would be decisive in any regional conflict. The Iranian demonstration last night is forcing a fundamental reassessment in Riyadh and Abu Dhabi of whether those investments provide the security guarantees that were implicit in the procurement decisions. This reassessment is already producing diplomatic tremors. Back-channel communications between Gulf capitals and Tehran, which have been ongoing at low intensity for months, are reportedly intensifying as Gulf leaders reconsider the wisdom of being positioned on the wrong side of a regional power shift that Iran appears to be winning on multiple dimensions simultaneously. The broader geopolitical consequence is the acceleration of the multipolar transition that has been underway for years. A unipolar world order depends on the credibility of American military power. That credibility depends on the operational effectiveness of American military platforms and the systems that make those platforms lethal. When a sanctioned adversary demonstrates in live operational conditions that the most advanced American export platform can be made ineffective through electronic warfare, the credibility foundation of American unipolarity takes a direct structural hit. Moscow and Beijing are not celebrating overtly. They are doing something more dangerous. They are learning, incorporating, and preparing. Every operational lesson from Iran's GPS denial campaign is being absorbed into Russian and Chinese military planning. The next time American or allied F-35S fly into a GPS-contested environment, they will face adversaries who have studied the Iranian precedent in detail and have the industrial and technical capacity to implement it at far greater scale. The electromagnetic spectrum has become the decisive domain of 21st century warfare. Whoever controls it, whoever can freely use it while denying its use to the adversary, holds the initiative in modern conflict. Iran just demonstrated that this control is not the exclusive property of wealthy Western nations with massive defense budgets. It is available to any nation with the intellectual capability, the strategic clarity, and the long-term patience to develop it. The F-35 that flew blind last night over the Middle East is a symbol of something larger than one aircraft on one mission. It is a symbol of a world order in transition, a world where the assumptions that have structured international security for 30 years are being overturned, one electromagnetic pulse at a time. As dawn breaks over a Middle East that has been permanently changed by one night of electronic warfare, the questions accumulating in war rooms from Tel Aviv to Washington to London carry a shared and urgent weight. What comes next? Can Israel recover its air superiority? Can the United States provide a technical fix? And most fundamentally, has the military balance in the Middle East shifted in a way that cannot be reversed regardless of what resources are committed? The answers to each of these questions are more uncomfortable than the governments involved are prepared to publicly acknowledge. In the short term, Israel has options that can partially restore F-35 operational effectiveness. Anti-jam GPS receivers that use directional antenna technology to maintain signal lock against jamming can be rapidly fielded on some aircraft. Navigation systems that use multiple redundant positioning inputs, inertial navigation, terrain reference positioning, and GPS in combination are more resistant to spoofing because the cross-checking between systems can detect the anomaly. Some of these upgrades are already in the pipeline for Israeli F-35s. Emergency acceleration of those programs is now the IDF's highest technical priority. But partial restoration is not the same as full restoration. The GPS denial environment that Iran has established over the operational theater will continue to impose constraints on Israeli air operations even after anti-jam measures are implemented. Spoofing resistant systems require more complex onboard computing, more sophisticated signal authentication, and carry their own operational limitations. The seamless precision that Israeli air power has relied upon will not be restored to its pre-crisis level, regardless of what technical measures are applied in the near term. More fundamentally, the Israeli Air Force now knows, and more importantly knows, that Iran knows that its GPS dependency is an exploitable vulnerability. The operational planning changes that knowledge requires are extensive. Every mission profile that has been built around GPS-guided precision delivery needs to be reevaluated. Every strike package that relies on GPS waypoint navigation needs alternative protocols. Every weapon that uses GPS as its primary guidance input needs a backup mode assessment. This is not a revision at the margins. It is a comprehensive re-examination of how the Israeli Air Force fights. That re-examination takes time that the operational situation may not provide. Meanwhile, Hezbollah is not pausing its operations while Israel recalibrates. The rocket and missile campaigns from Lebanon continue at sustained tempo. Iranian-supplied precision weapons continue finding their way to targets in northern and central Israel. The pressure that was designed to compound Israel's GPS crisis is being maintained and in some areas intensified because Hezbollah and Iran understand that the window of Israeli air power degradation is their strategic opportunity. For Washington, the calculus is becoming increasingly difficult. The United States can provide technical support, emergency equipment deliveries, and intelligence sharing. But the fundamental problem, an adversary that has developed GPS denial capability sufficient to disrupt F-35 operations, cannot be solved by American support short of direct military action against Iran's electronic warfare infrastructure. And that escalation carries consequences that the current American administration is visibly reluctant to accept. The broader lesson of what Iran accomplished last night is one that the international community will be processing for years. A nation that was supposed to have been economically strangled into strategic impotence by three decades of comprehensive sanctions demonstrated that it possesses the technical sophistication to blind the most advanced combat aircraft on Earth. It did so using indigenously developed systems on a home-built strategic foundation, without GPS and without Western components. The world that exists after this night is different from the world that existed before it. The air war over the Middle East has entered a new phase one, governed not by who has the best aircraft, but by who controls the electromagnetic environment those aircraft depend on. And in that contest, Iran has just established itself as a power that cannot be dismissed, cannot be sanctioned into irrelevance, and cannot be bombed back into strategic subordination. The F-35S will fly again. The technical fixes will be implemented. But the myth of unchallenged Western technological supremacy in the aerial domain, the myth that has structured the security calculations of nations across the globe for three decades, died last night in the electronic darkness above the Middle East. And nothing that happens next will bring it back.
And just like that, we come to the end of this week's broadcast. As you step back into your day, carry with you the questions that refuse to be silenced, the courage that refuses to shrink, and the curiosity that keeps truth alive. I'm Abby Masri, your host and narrator. Sharing this hour with you has been an honor, an hour grounded in clarity, in dignity, and in a solidarity that does not fade when the cameras turn away. If something you heard today stirred a thought, unsettled a certainty, or opened a door inside you, and if you ever feel the pull to lend your own voice to this work, know that there is room for you here. You can reach us anytime at twippodcasts@gmail.com. To our listeners, thank you. Thank you for your time, your trust, and your willingness to walk this difficult path with us. And to the extraordinary team whose work makes this program possible, Bob Funk, Stanley Robinson, Stephen Lowe, Sophia Rose Wolman, Tahani Abumosa, Dr. Bethany Marks, Dr. Rana Awad, Professor Yara Rashid, Juliet Salame Olivier, Reynad Al-Ghul, and our editor, Mohammed Al-Ghul. Your dedication, your clarity, and your steady hands are the pulse of this show. Week after week, you remind us that storytelling is not just a craft. It is inheritance. It is resistance. It is care. It is memory carried forward. This Week in Palestine is produced by Truth and Justice Radio, broadcasting for more than two decades from WZBC Student Radio at Boston College. If you missed any part of today's program, you can find us on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Podcast Index, iHeartRadio, Podcast Addict, Pocket Casts, Deezer, Listen Notes, Overcast, Castro, Podchaser, Castbox, Player FM, Good Pods, and True Fans. You can also explore our full archive on radioforall.net and archive.org. Just search This Week in Palestine, or TWIP, and look for the image of the little girl raising her hands in the victory sign. We're also featured on Million Podcasts, a platform uplifting Arab American creators and helping listeners discover new voices. Visit www.millionpodcasts.com to explore their growing library, including ours. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. Until then, take care, stay grounded, stay steadfast. This is Occupied Land. This is Palestine. And the call for freedom continues. Free Palestine, from the river to the sea.
Tiny hands against the wall, paper dolls begin to fall. Someone's running down the hall. Where did the light go? Where did the light go? Where did the light go? Faces I don't know. Where did the light go? Baby's blanket on the floor. Footsteps rushing through the door. Sirens getting louder more. Where did the light go? empty cradle by the bed. Morning sun is turning red. Words that can't be left unsaid. Where did the light go? Where did the light go?